Hello. Hi, everybody. A couple things right here at the top of the show. First of all, patreon.com/AustinArcher. Did you know that's a thing? Are you listening to the show and not aware that that's a thing? I doubt it, but I thought I'd just say it at the top of the show anyway. I just want to shout out to all my patrons. We've got a few new patrons over this last month or so, and I just want to say hi to the newbies. Hi to the originals, the OGs. I'm still in love with you. Still deeply, passionately in love with you, platonically, and I hope that's okay. I hope if you're in a committed monogamous relationship, it's okay that you know that you're listening to a podcast of a guy who's in love with you, because you're choosing to support and help make this show possible, help make my online content possible. I really, really do appreciate it. It means a lot to me. Second thing is, we haven't done a TikTok portion of the show for the last 2 weeks because I've been traveling and I just haven't really been available on the Sundays, but we'll get back to that. So if you've been like, where's the TikTok? I've been getting on TikTok and you're not there. We're getting back to it. This Sunday, 2 p.m. Pacific time, we'll be live on TikTok for the TikTalk portion of the show for next week's episode. This week's not going to have a TikTok portion, even though it would be a great episode to have a TikTok talk back for. But my guests today are just fantastic. So there's plenty of good content. And speaking of the content of this week's episode, that's the final little thing I wanted to say here at the top of the show. I'm just going to begin the episode with some audio from a TikTok that you may recognize. And I just want to give a teeny content warning. I really feel like this audio is pretty tame. It's just like kind of icky is all. It's just pretty homophobic and just icky. It comes from a gay man. It comes from a married gay man who has a husband who really ought to know better, but he doesn't. And that's the audio that I'm going to play at the top of the show, and I'll sort of get into my rebuttal to that, and then it'll sort of serve as a foil to the entire larger conversation on the episode today. But I just sort of wanted to throw that out there before I just assault you with this next audio. And I feel like even assault it's a heavy word. Cause it, like I said, it's mild. It's fine. You can do it. Trust me. If we were like standing in line for a roller coaster and you were like a little bit nervous and you were like, be honest with me. Can I handle this? I would let you know. I'm a person who gets sick on roller coasters, and I would be like, I wouldn't do this one if I were you. In fact, I might go sit down over there too. I would let you know if I felt like some of you need to sit out for this next 30-ish seconds, but don't worry. You can handle it. It's fine. It's like there's so many worse things that it could be. It could be a lot worse. This is mostly just like, ugh, ew. It's not like, oh my God, I wish I hadn't heard that, I think. But that's all. And great, I'm glad you're here.
As
again,
a gay man, I've never understood why Pride Month is a thing. Instead of Pride Month, we should have a day. If that. I believe that veterans and those that have served our country should have a month-long celebration. Those that have died for the freedom of our country should be the ones that we should be celebrating all month long. Being gay is just that. It's just being gay. Who you choose to have sex with has no regard to my life. Do I believe us gay people should have rights and should have the right to marry whoever we want to marry? Of course. There's no need to celebrate our sexuality and separate us from society. There's no need for companies to put a gay flag over their logo during June. There's no need to force sexuality down the throats of people who don't want to see it. In today's society, being gay is a new norm. There's no need to celebrate it.
So that's popular gay conservative TikToker Toby Duff. One of those token folks from a marginalized community the right loves to prop up to assert their lack of bigotry. See? Candace Owens is a black woman. She likes us. How could we possibly be racist if she likes us? Checkmate, libs. Little side note, if you're part of a movement, an ideology, or an organization that has to constantly work as hard as the GOP does to convince people that you're not racist, homophobic, transphobic, xenophobic, and or some other form of problematic, that's kind of a red flag. But all that aside, Toby sucks. His TikTok bio says, making liberals mad since 99 because he's 22 and literally doesn't know anything about the world around him. And I'm not saying that to be ageist. Some of the smartest and most woke people I know are teenagers. Kyori, the water protector I talked to on last week's episode about Line 3, is younger than Toby and miles out of his league in terms of intellectual, emotional, and spiritual intelligence. Toby just sucks because, like so many other conservatives, he opts for the comforts of ignorance instead of allowing himself to accept and experience the discomfort and hard truths of reality. If that audio sounds familiar, you may have seen that video where I responded point by point to his ridiculous assertion that Pride Month doesn't need to exist, that being gay isn't anything to celebrate. I go into how he's clearly unaware of the history of his own community, how as a white gay man raised in the early 21st century, he may have been lucky enough to have gotten through life without experiencing too much discrimination on a personal level, but that definitely doesn't mean that the larger queer community has not historically experienced intense, violent discrimination and oppression that is ongoing in modern society. I talk about how he keeps referring to Pride as an event that centers around gay people, and how he seems to not be aware that Pride exists to honor and celebrate the identities of many other groups other than just gay men. The argument he makes about how there should be a full month for our veterans was a popular talking point among conservatives on the internet this past Pride Month. The funny thing about this disingenuous position is you have all these self-proclaimed, totally not homophobic patriots saying that their objection to Pride Month has nothing to do with their hatred and fear of the LGBTQIA+ community, and everything to do with their love and respect for our veterans who only get a single day to be celebrated. It's remarkable that none of these incredibly patriotic people bothered to check and see if there is a month to celebrate our military. There is. It's May. It's literally the month right before Pride Month. You'd think that the patriots who love the vets would know that and would celebrate. It's almost as if they don't actually care about celebrating the military. They're just looking for a way to discredit and attack Pride Month without being obvious bigots. The point is, in 2021, it seems that a disturbingly large amount of people in society, including some members of the LGBTQIA+ community, are woefully unaware of what Pride actually is and why it exists. They seem to be under the impression that Pride is nothing more than a month-long, molly-fueled rave where amoral gays can shove their agendas down our throats. And I'm not saying you won't find Molly at a Pride party, I'm just saying that there's more to it than that. A lot more. Luckily, my friends Matt and Brandon over at the Homo Sapien Experience were willing to come and share some much-needed education and perspective with us. If you're not already following them, do yourself a favor. Pause the podcast, go to TikTok or Instagram, type in the_homo_sapien_experience, and smash that follow button like your life depends on it. They are serving hilarious content that exists to boost representation and be an unashamed symbol of what Pride looks like in action. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to the hilarious, effervescent, sensationally dynamic duo that is Matt Curiano and Brandon Contreras about Pride. Oh, fantastic. Hi, boys. How are you? Oh, man.
Oh, God.
I'm so glad to have you here. I'm such a big fan of the Homo Sapien Experience.
Oh, my God.
I really, really, the first time I saw it, so I'm good friends with Cooper Howell. And
we love Cooper.
Yeah.
Hello, Cooper.
Don't we just love Cooper?
And I love Cooper. How do you know Cooper?
Cooper and I are from the same town. We grew up together.
What?
And, yeah, we went to
Utah.
High school, like down the street from each other. And Cooper and I have been friends since high school. And then when Cooper was in college at the University of Utah, I was dating a good friend of his, and like we were just like we were pals there, and we were in like, you know, we did shows together. Cooper directed a production of Rent that I was in. And
oh my god, who were you?
I was Mark Cohen.
Oh my god.
Can we roll footage? Let's roll a clip.
December 31st, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. From here on in,
I love that.
Still got it.
I love how small the world is.
I saw Cooper in one of your things, and I was like, oh my god, I catered with this hilarious person, and so I like let Cooper, and I was like, how do you know them? And he was just like, oh, just friends in New York, you know. But then I followed the page from there, and I just think that everything you do is so fucking funny. I think it's such a good page, and it reminds me a lot of. Do you follow Best of Grindr at all?
Yeah.
We love Best of Grindr. Oh my god, literally taking the world by storm.
Oh my god, yes.
Literally running for office in 2022 in the in the midterms. Best of Grindr.
Are they really?
No, I'm kidding. But they could. Honestly, we're on our way towards that.
Eat your heart out, Pete Buttigieg. Here comes Best of Grindr and the Homo sapiens.
They're coming.
Yeah. We love Cooper. Cooper, they're an incredible human. They've done a bunch of different Homo sapiens stuff. Honestly,
they are a part of our community. They are part of our cast.
Thank you for correcting my pronoun usage. I've known Cooper for a very long time, and it's only recently that I saw that they... said that online, and I forgot their pronouns are they them.
Yep.
Anytime, everything's a growth and an evolution, and all you gotta choose.
Honestly, when Cooper started working with us, that's kind of been cool too about the community of people we have. It's like we talk about this all the time. It's like a queer journey, not a queer destination. Mm. So we've all grown so much.
Every single one of us.
Yeah, since like we started, which is like 3 years ago now. And Cooper was in like the inaugural first ever like Homo sapien video that like dropped. That
is the first one the Drag Race one where everyone's...
That was like the first official drop.
That's the first one I saw. And to be batting that well from the first drop, to have that be your premiere video is so goddamn impressive. Because if you go back in my videos to like 2015 when I first started making videos, it was trash for like 6 years before
roll
I...
Roll the footage on trash.
Trash. Let's roll trash. Here we go. No, listen. I mean, you look back and like... I mean, those first videos, they will always have a very special place because like, they look a little bit like Drag Race season 1 and 2. There's like some kind of weird filter. I was filming on like a Nikon 1.
We were also literally staring into the camera lens. Nothing was right.
Yep, nothing was right.
No wardrobe, no hair makeup, nothing.
And that's why, like, as opposed to now.
As opposed to now, so much hair makeup.
Drag Race season 1 and 2 with the filters.
A filter, literally Vaseline on the lens. That's what it felt like. But that's why those people like Cooper, when nothing to show. We had nothing to show, just an idea of like, hey, we want to make this video about, you know, Drag Race, like when Drag Race comes back on TV and people coming out of hibernation, queer people, gay hibernation, coming out of it to watch Drag Race. And like, but I have nothing to show. Do you want to come over and film this
and make eggs? It was in the morning. It's like, you're like, you want to make eggs? I'll have breakfast for you. Yeah. Like, that's literally what it is.
And they were like, yeah, sure. So those people, you know, now it's like they can see the work and stuff like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like we have like, but those people who came, they are true, beautiful friends. Cause all that's like, you understand, I think creating is one of the most vulnerable things. And so asking people to help make your vision come true, especially when it just lives in your head and all that you have is some words to be like, hey, this is my idea. And it, you know, you try and describe it, but honestly, what's in your head, you can't really describe perfectly. So it really takes a lot of trust.
It's also like art, without art, there's no risk with that. Like there's always risk in art, right? Mm-hmm. And we ask so much of our friends outside of art and like just us as humans, like, hey, I have this problem. I have this, this, and this, right? Uh-huh. And then when we want to create something even more, it's like, hey, also, this is what I want to do. Like, I'm not crazy. Do you want to come on this fun ride with me? And every single one of our friends and anyone that you have ever seen in a Homo sapiens sketch is always yes and.
Oh my God.
It is the most beautiful thing. And I think Matt and I are so grateful, so humbled that we have such incredible humans in our life. Like, it's just the best gift that Homo sapien has ever given us.
I'm a big believer in doers and the universe and the world, like, respecting and showing up for people who, like, put into action things that they want to do. And it, when you're in the arts and you're coming up in the arts with going to whatever it is, musical theater school, or you're surrounded by a lot of people with great ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. People who you'll get drunk with and they'll tell you about some idea they have for a TV show or for a musical or for a play that you're like, that's fucking brilliant. And, and it's sort of heartbreaking to watch these people never really pull the trigger on anything or just try and do it. And I've always been a big believer. It is. It's very vulnerable and it's hard, just like you said. And in many instances, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to call your friends together and do a table read of some script, some rough draft of a script you've written, and have all your friends there knowing that, like, it's not ready. But that's the whole point, is you need to hear it out loud to get it to its next phase. So it's a little bit embarrassing to show them this sort of dirty sketch that you've got of this idea. But, like, I really believe in, and my experience has been that when I do things, when I push through the fear and the discomfort and I do things, people are more than happy to show up. And in fact, they're, like, excited to be in the room with people who are doing an idea rather than just talking about doing an idea. And I always tell, like, I tell musicians who are want to make music videos and stuff, I'll be like, first of all, your idea probably is a lot more expensive than you have money for. So pare it down, figure out how you can shoot it in one location with a smaller cast, like, figure out an idea that's a little bit more doable. Then if you need people, like a crew and a few cast members, make sure that you're being economical and respectful with their time, because they're most likely going to be donating their time to you. But also, through after all of that, after you've checked all those boxes, trust that they're probably not going to be bummed out to be there. They're probably going to be excited to be there shooting something that day, because what else were they going to do that day? Like, you know,
Yeah. And I feel that. I feel with the cognizant of people's time. Every time we do a new video, it feels that, like, oh God, here we go. We just did one outside in Central Park.
Oh my gosh. On the hottest day.
On the hottest day of the year in the world.
I also just want to say that our specific scene that I was in, we were in direct sunlight, and that was a personal attack on me. And Matt was like, you know what? I think over there is better. And I was like, this is homophobic. Putting me in the sun was homophobic.
But it was, and it was like, right, cognizant of people's time, cognizant of location, and then you're doing it outside, you're like, it could rain, it could whatever. We on the way to where we were filming in Central Park, there was Anderson Cooper and Tony Bennett interviewing each other. Yeah, so there was like a crowd of people. Yeah, it was so cute.
It was so random. So we were like, we are also on our way to set. Anderson Cooper, if you can just
Can, like, get these people away, because you're literally distracting from us.
Also, if Anderson Cooper is listening to this, hi. I love you.
Hello.
I hear you work out at Equinox.
Hey, Anderson. I don't, but I just have something to say. Matt, don't worry about Matt. My name is Brandon.
Anderson. Hey. No. Silver Fox, you invented that. It's in the dictionary. Your picture's next to it.
That's so funny. Anyways, chat later. Love you.
Love.
I think I heard somewhere that Anderson does check in on this show every once in a while. So, like, hopefully he DMs you.
Thank you so much. What an ally you are. Please. You're such an ally.
He can message us on Scruff or Grindr.
Yeah, he uses an alias when he comments on my episodes. And then one of my listeners was like, just so you know, that's Anderson Cooper. And I was like, are you kidding me? They're like, yeah, he doesn't want anyone to know. But so,
oh, great. So he'll definitely message us on Grindr.
Literally
then.
Knew it.
Yeah. Headless torso would be Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, his alias is Canderson Looper. It's sort of like you look at it and you don't really know what it's saying, but then if you think about it,
so smart.
Yeah,
it's all about subtlety these days,
right? Know? Because it seems like it's just like a fan account, but it's it's actually him. So, did you work the event when we were catering for that company? Did you work the event that Tony Bennett sang at?
No,
I did some
also. Awesome. Which catering company did we work for? Did we do great performances? Did we do?
We did.
Oh, we did top.
Bless you.
Top
bless
shop.
You both.
Did we do?
No. Cutting edge. We did cutting edge.
God, that's New York City. We work for 16 catering companies. They all blur together into one awful experience where I'm constantly covered in some kind of liquid, and my back and knees and my legs hurt. And all I'm trying to do is not take out the trash at the end of the night, which is the grossest thing in the world.
Also, something about catering, I think it's very different from waitering too. In general, it takes a certain kind of human. It takes a certain kind of human to serve another human.
Yes.
And whoever can do it, beautiful, brilliant. And I think that there's something different with waitering and catering.
Oh yeah.
There is.
Catering, I
cannot do anymore. It's the most thankless job.
Yeah. No tips.
Job ever. I've never been more disrespected in my life than I have catering events.
You are furniture. You're literally stand here and hold these tray of drinks for literally an hour and a half while people walk by you, scoff at you, be like, what is this? So poorly, what is this white wine? You don't know what the white wine is. Right. You're like, we have white, red,
they just
sparkling.
Give me a tray and I have to hold it till my arm falls off. And
till my arms fall off. In a lawsuit right now with all catering companies, my arms that ever existed.
Broken.
Well, and it's like, you know, rich people are already the worst people when you're at a waiting job, when you're just serving in a restaurant. Like, rich people can be the worst people because they're the most picky and they have the you know. But to work these events that you're catering and watch the event that needs to be put on to convince people to do the bare minimum with their millions of dollars, to be like, we need to convince you to donate $10,000 to this really good cause, which is like nothing to you. It's literally like me donating $10 to something. But we're going to throw a it's going to be a huge, you know,
it's going to cost so much money.
It's going to be a black tie,
raise a lot of money.
Red carpet event. There's going to be Tony Bennett's going to be singing there. It's going to be only the richest, fanciest people, you know, we're going to be auctioning off a week in the Bahamas on a yacht, on Jeff Bezos's yacht. And like, you know, and it's just, it's crazy. And the goal is like, we just need you to give us a little bit of money for these like starving kids. And that's what
literally,
the whole.
And in New York, you are witnessing the most extreme wealth. Some of the wealthiest people in the world.
I've seen some stuff, man.
The most ridiculous, sometimes stupid things ever. I once catered, it was a bar mitzvah, but it was a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah. It was twins. I forget. That's called something
so
special.
Cool.
Yeah. Ooh. It was at the Museum of Natural History.
The Museum of Natural History.
The
honestly,
big whale room.
Work. If you got it, use it.
If you got it, spend it. I say you make money to spend money, and they have money to spend.
Oh, one of the craziest events I ever catered was a bat mitzvah, and it was nuts. It was like, but I want to hear the story about the Natural History Museum, the double.
Oh, yeah. I just mean, like, yeah, that's it. We're in the whale room. It was outside, like the big, you know,
the
big
whale
blue
room was
whale.
A dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
like, you got to go through parts. They rented out the museum. The whole museum.
Oh my God.
Then I remember another wedding, you know, a Jewish wedding that was at the Brooklyn Museum. Mm-hmm. And you know how the Brooklyn Museum, they have the chuppah, which is like the in traditional weddings, there's like a little
canopy
that they stand underneath. Mm-hmm. So
I've seen
Brooklyn
Fiddler,
Museum,
yes.
Yes, you know. So you walk in and they had constructed out of these vines, like this entire thing where you would walk almost like a runway down these beautiful vines that like looked like this natural wood. They were real. And then it would go into and up into a chuppah that was like made, and it was these beautiful flowers coming out of it and leaves and everything. Gorgeous. It looked like its own exhibit, right? Huge. Anyway, they come in, big ass wedding. They have the wedding, right? Then they go upstairs into this humongous ballroom to have their wedding. As soon as they leave, they tear down that chuppah. It must have taken like 10 hours to make. It was used for an hour and then they tore it all down. It's just like, oh my God, all of that money, those trees, everything for
the opulence.
I mean, it was gorgeous. The opulence was everything.
And I'm like, I'm literally over here being like, oat milk is an extra 75 cents. I don't, you know what? I'll just take the coffee black. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Like, what is my life?
One time.
What is my life?
The only thing I catered in Los Angeles was they had an art festival that was a 4-day long art festival that was all over the city. And there were like different locations and you would be assigned to a different location every day. And we just like basically were pointing people to these different exhibits and stuff. And I went and worked in this studio one day. There was a sculptor who was doing an open house in his studio, and he was letting people kind of go through the studio and look at what he was working on. And I, at one point, was trying to get out of the way of some people that were coming through in a group, and I bumped into one of his sculptures that was this blown glass, fragile thing. And I turned around, and the thing is, it's wobbling back and forth on the, and everyone in the room, it's just like pin drop silence, and just what you just did, the whole room gasp. And I had no choice but to wrap my arms around this sculpture and catch it. Even though I'm like, you can't touch, you're not supposed to touch this thing. But I had no choice. And so I like catch it, and it doesn't fall, it doesn't break. And I like gingerly set it back on. But when I turned around, the look in the room, look on the faces in the room, and the woman who was my manager that day, who was my lead, it was just me and her at the location. God. I turn around and it's silence, and in the silence she just goes, "Oh, Austin, no." And I just go, "I'm so sorry." And she goes, "We have to step outside now. I'm so sorry, everyone." And I was like, okay. And we stepped outside, and I didn't get fired or anything, but it was like,
But it also wasn't your fault either.
Right. It was like, I was backing away from some people, but it was like a TV show. It was like, this couldn't have gone.
Oh my God. Did the owner like see?
Oh yeah, he was there.
Happen?
He was, and he just was silent with everyone else, just staring at me. Like, just like everyone was just,
I feel jaws like I was open. There. Yeah. I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel it. That's
I literally horrifying. That stress and anxiety. Oh,
I'm sweating thinking about that. Literally sweating. Wow.
Yeah.
God, poor thing.
And I knew I could never cater ever again.
Yeah. Also, you wouldn't be able to afford. You'd still be paying money for it.
Oh my God.
She said that too when she came out. She's like, "I'm so glad you caught that." She's like, "Because do you have any idea how much that thing is insured for?" And I was like, "Yeah, probably more money than I've ever made in my life." She goes, "Oh, definitely, definitely." And I was just like, "Okay, so." But she's like, good thing you caught it.
The service industry, there's just like, you're the heroes of our world, literally.
Yes,
that's truly. Just the amount of shit you have to deal with.
That's actually what finally put the nail in the coffin on the service industry for me. Is I was furloughed for like 8 months during the pandemic, and then I was called back to my restaurant. I worked for like 4 weeks, thinking foolishly that the environment would be so good there because people would be feeling so bad for service industry workers. And it was the exact opposite. It was the worst I've ever had, because all the people who were coming out to restaurants in November of 2020 were like the worst people. We're just people who just wanted to be done with all this pandemic bullshit and wanted to have a party. And so it was a terrible experience coming back, wearing head-to-toe PPE, like gloves, face shield, mask, and having people still be their entitled shitty selves. And I just was like, I don't think I can ever do this ever again. And then luckily the internet stuff started going a little bit better, and I didn't have to go back. But
I'm really glad that happened for you.
Me too. Thanks. I want to talk to you both, though. So you're hilarious people, and I love your content so much, and I love your channel so much. I wanted to talk a little bit, even though it's August and it's 2 months past it, I wanted to talk a little bit about Pride and the concept of Pride Month, and like what that means for you as queer content creators. And like, obviously you can have a lot of fun making a lot of content during the month of June, really going in on that. But there was this sort of concept, there was this debate this year that you probably saw a lot of, that just came up a lot in online content, that was like, why do we have a month for these people but we don't have a month for soldiers, even though we do? But that was like the whole conversation, and I wonder what are your feelings about Pride and the usefulness of Pride? Because I also get a big spectrum of responses sometimes when I talk to people in the community about how they feel about the corporatization of Pride and the cap. You know,
We made a video about it.
It's Pride year now.
Yeah,
and I think it's gonna be Pride decade.
It's and Pride week. It's Pride
millennia.
Day. Pride hour. Pride minute. Pride second. So the fact that you're not wishing us a happy Pride right now is in fact homophobic. Austin.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first of all, I just want you to recognize that and just see the harm that you're causing. Now.
I appreciate you calling me in on that, and I wish you a happy Pride year.
Oh my God! Thank you so much, Austin.
Thank you.
So sweet
again.
Soon we'll let you know in five. This I mean, these past two prides have been really
awakening
for sure. I think if we go back to last Pride, like the Pride before last, so it's like pandemic
Pride, like the first
full.
That was one of the, I mean, I can only speak on behalf of both of our experiences together, just Matt and I. That was a really special one for us because we were able to like go to the march and the rally.
In New York.
In New York, led by Black trans humans, like forwarding the way as they did before and as they always do. And essentially what that pride was a fight. Which was
a protest.
It was a protest.
Yeah.
And that was the most exciting thing. And it wasn't about tickets to this club or exclusion of this body type or the or capitalism or like this float, this bank is doing this at this certain time and now they're gonna have a float and they're gonna have rainbow merch. It wasn't that at all. It was truly about the people.
Yes.
It was about awareness. And we went to this march and we saw every different kind of human that ever could possibly exist in the queer community. And that was one of the most beautiful things ever.
And that was because the actual Pride parade itself, the normal parade in New York City, was canceled because of COVID, right? So, and then literally in June is when everything with Black Lives Matter and the protests and rallies really took flight. And so it was just so powerful. Like, and that Pride was the 50th anniversary of the first like Stonewall March, the first ever what was deemed the Pride Parade.
Right.
And so it just felt
tangible.
A year of just insanity, it felt something really powerful and beautiful in that. And that in just like a pandemic, everything's happening. And yet this pride, this parade, this march, which was this protest, felt more in line with what the origins of Pride was like, more than it's been in a while. And so that we'll never forget.
Yeah,
that.
It was like
so powerful and
really arms beautiful. Linked solidarity and accountability. It was really special and beautiful, and to witness that together. And of course, that Pride is different from this.
Yeah,
Pride.
This Pride was very different. Pride had more, you know, of what is now, deemed, more activities,
more like parties, that. Like it
the party was coming back
again.
A little bit. 2020 was Black Lives Matter was in full swing. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. And 2021 was a little bit coming back to.
Yeah. And they're still maintained a lot. And that's the whole thing. There still was. And if you were still a part of it, like we were, like there were still a lot of marches and a lot of activism that we were honored to be a part of.
Yes, the queer liberation
march. Like, there's a lot of things that we can continue to do because Pride for us this year didn't magically flip on, which are like, okay, now we can go to these parties. Like, that was not it for us, and we wanted to make sure that wasn't it for us because we needed to keep that beauty of that momentum last year going.
Yeah,
because you can easily.
Yes, it can easily just be a big circuit party,
Yeah.
So there is like, I think a really, and I think both are valid, right? Pride, and I think why sometimes people get frustrated with Pride Month, like I think that are outside of the queer community is because like, it is a lot of celebrating. There's a lot of colors
loud.
And it's loud and it's proud and it's out there. And it's so, even us after a Pride Month, we are like, oh man, we're tired.
I'm tired of being like, it's like, oh man, I am tired of being myself right now. I was just myself so loudly for the past month.
Yeah. So like, but I think especially what was unique about this year's Pride is that it was the first time we were vaccinated. Mm-hmm. We were going out. Like, it was the first time where
we were selective about going out too. And like,
well,
specific
and,
things
and
that we
the
were
places
doing.
That we went were really cool. Where like they required vaccinations, you
good.
Had to show your Excelsior
and
pass.
And they also weren't exclusive to certain kinds of humans too. Cause that's something for me that, of Pride's past, a lot of these parties and a lot of the community excludes one another. And
it's just in like a pay, $150 to go do this event.
There's so many factors to it. So it was nice that we were able to surround ourselves with people that we wanted to and communities
we had a good crew.
That we wanted to surround ourselves with. And that was really exciting. And I also feel like us as queer people, we found ourselves a little more this past year, and we were able to celebrate that, the new versions of ourselves, like we are, like we do every year. But this year was quite special.
And it was like a big homecoming. So that was really powerful. Just to like, honestly, be in spaces with other queer people, dance with other queer people, celebrate.
Dancing.
That, do you know Meg Stalter, Austin?
I don't.
You know? So she's a comedian. She's on Hacks. She's big in the queer community. Awesome. You know, hilarious.
I hear this name a lot. You're actually like the fifth person in the last few weeks who has asked me if I know this person. So I think I just need
Austin,
to know.
You need to look. Research. Look her up. Right. Yep.
Okay.
And she did that video. I don't know if you saw that. Was like, hi, gay. Happy Pride Month here at the Butter Shop. That she was making fun of.
Yeah.
Of companies.
Companies during Pride. Uh-huh. And anyway, that had just came out. So literally that became like a way to greet other queer people.
It became a queer,
gay,
like queer, literally became like a queer iconic greeting.
So like that was, we were out it on and like the Pride weekend in New York City, literally just screaming hi gay and being responded with hi gay, happy
it
Pride.
Was,
like it was
a moment.
It was so beautiful.
It was so special. And that's what Pride did. It brought us all together and with humor and not taking ourselves seriously. And that's why we.
I wonder how many people know that. Like the reason why Pride is in June and just kind of like how people don't really know what Juneteenth is because it's not taught in schools and we don't, you know, we're having this debate over critical race theory and like what parts of our history we should and should not teach. But I wonder how many people know that Pride is actually commemorating a real thing that happened, that it's actually in commemoration of Stonewall versus just an arbitrarily selected month to just be happy that you're in the queer community.
I think that ties into your conversation that you're talking about is like why people were so up in arms with like, why do we have this month or why is this or straight pride? You know how they have those things.
Yeah.
It's because people actually aren't aware. It's this blissful ignorance that they just do not know why. Mm-hmm. And that's what I guess we're trying to do now. Like, this is why we want the world to know. And that's why that's why queer people are living so loudly than they have ever have before. Ever in the history of our lives now, because it's time to know.
Right. Yes.
And I think also, you know, it's not just, we should say it's not just, you know, straight people who don't know queer history. It's also queer people who don't know their own history. Right. I think, you know, there's, and a lot of it has been lost. A lot of it has not been talked about.
And a lot of it has been appropriated.
Yeah, right. So that's literally, there's, I mean, I think that this past year and a half has also taught us, right, just how we teach history, how we teach where we've come from is flawed and it's one-sided and it needs to be opened up. So yeah, it's not just, you know, like, right, Stonewall is a big thing. And so that also is something that, you know, we always want to make sure we remember is that, you know, Pride is a celebration, of life. But why is it? It's commemorating, right, in 1969, the Stonewall riots that happened, at the Stonewall Bar that still exists now in New York City, right?
Yes.
You had trans women of color like Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, who literally, like, at that time, talk about, you know, the police, know, they would come in and raid these bars, right? They would pose undercover. And that was quite a common thing. But what made Stonewall so significant at that time was it was one of the first times that these people in New York City fought back. Mm-hmm. And like, they talk about how, dare I say, not butthurt, but like these cops were humiliated that these drag queens, deemed sissy, were fighting back, throwing things and fighting back against the cops so that they had to retreat. And like, how?
I mean, you can also say that still happens to this day. I mean, it even last Pride, this Pride, it always happens, especially with the police. And I think, and that being said, like Sylvia Rivera also was ostracized by their community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will never forget the speech that she was making in Washington Square Park, and she was getting booed by her own queer community.
Yeah.
And that's the saddest part. And so like this fight is still ongoing and it still happens today. And these things that we need to learn are as simple as books, as research, as like we have to become the historians of our own past, and so we can navigate and change our future, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's this book that is super, super great. It's The Queen's English, and it's like the LGBTQIA plus dictionary of like lingo and colloquial expressions. And it's by Chloe Davis. And it basically talks about the origins of a lot of the language that we use in queer culture and where it came from and how it's appropriated sometimes. And like we have to understand where we have come from in order to be present and understand our present and change and grow with our future.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that whole, I mean, it's just sort of how the standard gets held higher for allies and for people who are, I mean, I get frequently, I'll have people criticize me for this, that, or the other thing that are followers and supporters who will say like, I think this language that you used in this video is problematic for the following reasons, but I can tell that they're trying to offer a call in rather than just pick a fight or something like that. And if I'm ever defensive about that, you know, the response that I'll hear is like, well, you're held to a higher standard because we see that you're trying to be an ally. And I think that's the same for any community that is asking society for heightened inclusion and inclusivity and heightened acceptance also needs to make sure that they are doing their best to be as inclusive as possible, right? You know, and make sure that the party is for everyone that fits under the umbrella, and that it is a celebration of all these marginalized identities, and that it's not just, like you said, the barriers to entry on some clubs, whether it's a price point or whether it's just maybe whether it's an ableist thing, that there's not
it's a race thing, it's a body, it's a fat phobic thing, it's in all the things, it's so present, we can't hide from it,
because I think what my favorite thing about, so when I was in my early 20s, like, Pride was my favorite holiday. It honestly became like my favorite time of year. Every June in Salt Lake City has a great Pride. They've got a fantastic.
Oh my God. Salt Lake City is lit.
Yeah. Fantastic. And I would go down there every June and get so excited to get shit faced during the day. I would day drink all day long. I would drink screwdrivers in the morning and walk in the parade and be drunk by noon and then drinking beer at the festival. And like, it was a great, happy, drunk time where I would go around and kiss my friends and hug people, and I'd grab my friends and kiss them on the lips and go, I'm so proud of you. And I, you know,
Austin,
let's roll the tape.
Austin, we should probably hang out during Pride then, right?
Yeah, lots of mouth kisses.
Oh my God, Austin, yes. Good for you, baby.
It's actually Pride. It's Pride year.
So Austin, we should probably get together ASAP so we can celebrate each other.
Let's see your allyship in action.
This is all pre-COVID and pre-sobriety, too. I've been sober for 3 years. But
Congratulations.
Yeah,
thank you very much. My favorite thing about the feeling of Pride, the feeling I got when I would be there is, and Salt Lake has their fair share of protesters on the corner and everything like that, but I'd look at those people and I'd go, look what you're protesting. Everyone here just loves each other and we're all having a great time. Yeah. And it's like, I saw Pride as like, it was even for me as an ally. I felt comfortable there. Like, this is a place to indulge in self-love and a celebration of self-love and self-acceptance, and that I'm here to support my friends who feel like they have been not seen by their families and communities, and I'm here to like let them know how much I love them and how proud of them I am. And and then I went through a phase where I started seeing more and more of this sentiment of like who we don't want to see at Pride and what I don't want to see at Pride, and I got a little bit like butthurt about seeing messages where people would be like, I don't want to see fucking straight people celebrating at Pride celebration. It's not for you. Please don't show up. And I would be like, oh, what? I really like going though. And I just like, it's kind of like going to my friend's birthday party. Like, I want to go and like celebrate my friend. And I think I was intentionally reading a little bit of like negative intent with that message and like making it personal when it wasn't personal. Mm-hmm. I think that what those messages were more about is about people who are sort of appropriating the overall cause and message just as an excuse to go party and kind of like get drunk and throw beads. But I wonder, I mean, what your thoughts are on that.
It's, I think we all, you have to remember that you're still a visitor, a part of a community.
Yes.
And no matter what, people who identify as straight, even in, I mean, we see it in the entertainment business, we see it in corporate, we see it anywhere. Well, don't share the same adversity as people who are queer and who have the journey of either coming out, exploring that, questioning it, all of it. So it's this really this big ownership. It's why we all fight like for queer stories to be told by queer people, because there's something about there's the singularity of one's experience, and also there's a shared adversity. Of course, there's a lot of bridges in that, because that everyone is, we are not a monolith. So Matt's queer experience is different from mine, because we not only one identify differently, we also are different races and backgrounds. So it, remember, when straight people, no matter what their race is too, they are a visitor into a community, a culture, and a way of being.
So
I think it has nothing necessary. And you said it right. It's not personal at all. But what happens is that us as queer people work so hard on curating safe spaces for us inside of ourselves, and then our direct links to one another. And these spaces sometimes are not for other people. And sometimes they are. And I think that's... I think that's a situation, very situational, of course, but it's all about a shared experience and a shared adversity and a battle and a consistent fight that we continue to go through daily.
And I think with, you know, it's always a tricky situation, because we're not a monolith. So everyone's going to have a different opinion and experience for specifically queer events and things like that. But that's where I think, you know, for allies, you just check in with your queer friends, right? If they're like, yo, Austin, you have to come to Pride, like, come with us. Like, if you're invited in, I think that is beautiful and fine, because also, like, we can't progress without it. We need allyship. Like, that is so important. I think that's what's important too, because, you know, you need allies to stick up and stand up for you in maybe to spaces that you're not like, maybe it's in the, you know, to the bosses that you're not even in the conversations. If you're an employee, like, if maybe, like, what if, you know, you work at a new job and you're one of the only like queer people, you need those. So I think allyship is so incredible and important. So and like, somebody, I think it also is just like, exactly right. Like, why are you there? What's your heart? You know, like, and
so, why it's self-reflection too. Like, why?
So like, somebody like you would be like, I think, like, especially the parade, I think it's just like, really is such a beautiful celebration. And also, like, I can't wait. Like, I think soon enough, everyone's going to identify as queer. Like,
I hope so. Everyone does identify as queer. It's just,
like, almost half of like the youth now identify as queer, like, like young Gen Z. And so we're going to eventually come to a point where, like, these constructs that we've grasped onto so much, like, you know, we're going to be much more fluid. And so,
People on the right would see that when they see about what's happening with the youth, they'll go, see, they're taking over. It's the agenda. It's this trend that's sweeping across kids. This isn't how it used to be. I think that it's a misunderstanding of like how the term queer is evolving and changing, and what that means for people who are identifying that way, because it means any number of things now. It means basically any form of just not feeling comfortable with traditional standard heteronormative titles or identifiers, feeling like, I don't feel like traditional heteronormative straight masculine cis male fits, doesn't feel like that's the way that I express my identity in public, or that doesn't feel like the role that I necessarily sit comfortably into. And it's a little bit more of like a descriptor to just almost identify as just anything outside of that.
It doesn't look like anything. It doesn't, right? There's no, we talk about this all the time, of like, you don't get a certificate in the mail to be part of like the queer community. There's nothing really necessarily that you need to do. It's just, you know yourself. And I think it's cool to see a lot of people during this pandemic, when they've been forced to sit and look at themselves and come out of this being like, I think I might be pan, or I think I, you know, I think my pronouns, we are, our pronouns our have pronouns, changed. Like, we go by he, they, like, and that came out of just so much, self-reflection.
Yeah. And also we also have to think about too, Austin, specifically in your case too, what society has placed on you because of either what you look like, how you act, what you sound like, how you present. Like, mm-hmm. that's also society and what media tells us that you're supposed to be. And that's not anyone else's decision except yours. So when we hang up this podcast and we're done and you sit alone in your room, it's how you feel ultimately.
Yeah.
On how you're going to see yourself from that then on. And like I said, we have changed so much and grown so much just by sitting and self-reflecting, and we identify so differently now than we did.
Yeah. And we're not done.
We are not done. It's like,
just a journey.
It's a journey.
We might change. We might go back to this. Yeah.
People hyper fixate on that too. I think that it's like, yes. if it changes too much, that's proof that it's not real, that you're just sort of going back. You're like, no, I'm just trying to find a different level of truth rather than something that is so fixed. And this idea of like, there's these two things that you can be, and anything other than that, you're lying. You're just full of shit. And it's like,
And to those people, I think that's a more reflection on them, right?
Because absolutely.
Because there is this quality of human beings, right? We attach ourselves to labels and things, right? Mm. So it's often, and I think that honestly was the huge thing about gay marriage when it was such and it still is a big deal to a lot of people, but like, as in like people are against it, is it has nothing to do with them, yet it has everything to do with them. Mm-hmm. Because if we allow these people to get married, what does that say about me? If you change your pronouns, wait, what does that say about me?
It's fear.
You don't identify as what, wait, what about me? So that fear, they react in a very visceral way because we grasp onto these things.
Yes.
And I think what's so beautiful at the queer community is I always feel like the queer community is often on the forefront of like where we're going, right? Sure. They are challenging, asking questions, fucking up the system.
Yeah.
And it's just like so exciting, right? So of course, you know, that seems like people are, you know, like, no, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's what do you mean if we don't have this?
Yeah. It's being progressive in not the political sense, but in the sense of like actuality of like
humanity.
It's like, think about fashion. Think about the media. Think about these people that like really shift gears and change everything. And this is now how we live.
Yeah. Because listen, at the end of the day, we made it all up. We made up 100%. Everything.
I had this epiphany recently that's such a like, I think it's a really basic realization, but I don't know why it had never struck me this way before, that homophobia and transphobia and any kind of fear of anything outside of traditional heteronormative personal identifiers have so much more to do with that person's internal fear of those things in themselves, because it's because of the way that they were socialized to fear those things. They were socialized and brought up to think, if you're that way, you risk being murdered in the street. You risk a lifetime of ridicule. You risk being cast out by your family, having a father who will never look at you the same way again, having a mother who will never look at you the same way again. There is so much fear of exploring those questions internally of, could I date someone of the same gender? Could I potentially use a different descriptor to express my gender? Like, there is so much fear of going down that path personally, and that internal fear gets projected out in all these incredibly toxic ways. Yeah. But it is 100% an internal struggle. It is an internal fear.
Yeah, and also it's years of societal brainwashing.
Yes.
We're told to, I mean, think about the campaign on milk when we were younger. They were like, milk is strong bones, drink milk now. Yeah. Uh-huh. Only milk, milk only. It's like that, but think of that for every single thing that ever existed. That can even go back to brainwashing into thinking that women belonged in the house. Like that's, you know what I mean? So everything was brainwashed created by someone, and usually the patriarchy. I mean, that's systems have crumbled because of it.
For years, I've told other straight friends and straight people who want to be allies that if they don't already, and I've said this, I talked about this a little bit earlier, kissing my friends at Pride, but like, you should consensually kiss your friends of the same gender and be more physically affectionate with them, because chances are, if you're not doing that, it's because you have some kind of internalized fear of it. You feel like, what happens if I kiss this person and I like it? Now, there's two two things is, A, if you like it, you should figure that out. You should figure out if you're going to like that or not. And B, if you don't like it, what that proves to you is that there's nothing to be afraid of. That this whole lifetime of fear that you've had, that it's okay. That you can kiss someone in a platonic, loving friendship way to just say like, hey, I love you. Like, I, you know, and or just be physically affectionate with them, be comfortable being close with them in a physically affectionate way and not have to fear that physical contact, because all that is that's internal fear. And you are getting to sort of like take a sledgehammer to it by opening yourself up to that, that possibility. So I always tell people like, it's a great way to dismantle some internalized fear is just like breaking through it with a simple little kiss. It's so harmless. It's so like, because if you're certain that you're straight and nothing's going to happen, then what are you actually afraid of? Like, what is...
Prove it.
Prove it.
Yeah, Austin, prove it.
I will. Get over here.
Okay, so we'll see you soon. Yeah. I knew it. I knew it in your eyes when I saw this.
I knew it in your stash, actually.
I knew it in your mustache. I was just like,
your stash is queer. I know.
Your stash is already full queer.
I've seen your stash on Scruff.
This is very queer. Like, it's very homoerotic.
Like, give a blowjob or two and just see.
Literally, just wrap your...
Just as friends. Just like a friendly hand job. Like, it's...
Lick a butt in a friendly way. Dogs do it. That's allyship.
You're afraid not to, because what you're going to find out is like, oh, you know what? This doesn't really do it for me, but it's okay. It's still my friend. I can lick their butt. Yeah. And like,
Oh my God. At any time.
It's about discovery and growth. Of
discovery. And if there's thesis. No eye contact, it's not gay. If you've, science.
If you've never made your friend orgasm, then like, you're not really a good friend, are you?
You're not
you're
a good
not
friend.
A good friend.
But honestly, that's why we make the homo say, that's like we make the art that we do, right? Is because like we're asking the questions, we're discovering. I never thought that I would have such a queer, like I would be producing such queer content if you told the little kid. God. You know what I mean? It's like these videos, no matter how kooky and ridiculous and zany, they're all little love letters to our younger queer closeted scared selves that had no
friends,
couldn't see the world, was afraid of what the future was, you know. And now
I think that's my lifelong admiration of the queer community, you know, like growing up pretty homophobic in a Mormon family and then coming out of that and course correcting and everything, but there's this admiration that's due to that exact thing that you're talking about, the bravery to self-actualize in a world that tells you this self-actualization could get you killed, and to be like, well, I'm going to do it anyway because
it's wrong
or you're going to hell, and to do it anyway and be like, if I don't, I'm either going to die from suicide or I'm going to just risk living a very, very unhappy life. And the bravery to, so like whenever I see Pride and Pride Month, I just see millions of people who are owning their identity and themselves in the face of a world that is pushing the message still today in 2021, pushing this message that there is a correct way to be and an incorrect way to be. Mm-hmm. And even though the liberal agenda is doing its best to try to course correct that message, the message is still that very much there. It's still very clear that parents in kids' TV shows are overwhelmingly straight and cisgender you know, and that this is the way a family looks, and this is, you know, the message is still there. And
also like just existing is a form of rebellion.
Yes.
Just existing in my own body is a form of act of resistance to what the world is providing is quote unquote normal, and how normal essentially equates to a lot of white. Like that's essentially what we have deemed as a society and how we can trace that back to racism.
And even I'd say, you know, when your question about corporations and things like that, we do, you know, we made a whole video about corporations during Pride, which is a boardroom of a bunch of straight people trying to figure out what you know, queer people want, and it just being ridiculous. But I will say, like, you know, this country is not, has a long way to go still with their equality, especially for LGBTQI plus people. But Worldwide, we are in a very, very fortunate and lucky to be here. And even though we roll our eyes when Bank of America has some kind of, you know, ridiculous, like, pride, this pride, like, oh, of course, you've always loved the gays. Sure, sure, sure. Mm-hmm. We have to also understand that that is a form of progress, right? Like, mm-hmm. it is being brought mainstream. And what I really hope and what, you know, we hear from people, the content we produce, the Homo Sapien Experience, we don't just hear from people here in America, but people worldwide. And so
we also have this incredible privilege too of living in America.
Yes, living in America. So, and we're able to produce the content. It's not censored. We can do that. We can hold hands when we walk down the street and we're just friends, but yeah. we hold hands. Like we can kiss somebody, you know, of the same sex or like in the street. Like, so we also hope that we are pushing not just here in this country, but in the whole world, this conversation forward, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done worldwide. Yeah. And we are in America, we are light years ahead of some other places. So yeah. And
here's a real softball question to wrap it up. There's this idea, this argument, I talked about this at the beginning, like this, well, if we've got Pride Month, how come we don't have Veterans Month? Even though we do, it's May. But like, or just, well, how come we don't have, I don't have a straight parade. I don't, you know, I'm not asking anyone.
July 4th.
Yeah, it's called every, yeah, goddamn day.
It's called every single day.
Yeah, it's called every it's single called, day. It's called The World Is Built For
on
You.
In every movie, on every magazine, in every TV show.
Yeah. It's called Nantucket during the summer.
It's called Nantucket during the summer. It's called NASCAR. And this is the softball question, does having a month to celebrate the queer community and the pride that people have chosen to have in their identities rather than the shame that they are told that they should have, the pride that they have chosen to embrace and the self-love that they have chosen to embrace, does having that take away from any other cause? Does it mean that we can't celebrate other things? Like,
it's like,
yes, it does. No, we should get rid of it immediately.
We should get rid of it immediately. No, it's just like people are reading between the lines. You can have it all. We can celebrate this, mm-hmm. this month. Just because we do that does not mean we exclude anyone else. We are allowed to exist in shared space.
Right.
I mean, the fact that we're not even taking up more space is beyond me. Just take it all.
I mean, yeah.
Every single day.
Especially with the costumes.
The costumes. Like, I have more than 31 days of outfits that I need to present all year, Austin.
Yeah. I think it all goes back to the ego and a lot of it, right? Again, I don't understand how us having a Pride Month takes away anything from you or what's happening with you. And if it is, I think that you gotta, baby, you look deeper, because it's not us. We're just highlighting something that's inside of you that you need to take care of.
Also, what are you not seeing of yourself already that you have to attack someone else that is not even as visible as you know, like, it's all self-reflection.
We just did a video. We can't talk too much about it. But it is like a flipping of the script of, you know, the way in which heteronormative society can talk about queer people, even just to the, like, I just don't want it in my face. I don't want to see it.
It's too much. I don't want it.
What does that mean? Does that mean we don't want... Could you imagine if we were like, I just want to see straight people kissing. On a commercial, I can't.
Oh my gosh, straight people, everything is sexualized.
If I see another Sandals Resort commercial with a straight couple kissing...
Barely clothed people, like how many straight sex scenes I've had to watch in PG-13 movies, and then they bring their kids too, I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, people.
But I can't hold my hand because it's too much.
People insist that going to a pride event is like just having sex shoved down your throat, and I'm like, hey, look, there is an aspect of pride in the summer, in the heat, that can't be and shouldn't be divorced from a certain aspect of like sex, because the sexuality of a lot of the people who are celebrating is the thing that is being subverted, and so thing that is also being celebrated. It can't be divorced from the identities being celebrated, but also straight people over sexualize everything that has to do with queer culture.
Literally,
there's a guy on TikTok that I follow who's a gay kindergarten teacher, and he said,
oh my gosh,
he has, you know who I'm talking
love
about
him.
And he's
yes.
like, he's like, parents will ask me if I tell my kids that I'm married, and I'll say like, yes, I tell them that I have a husband, just like any teacher would mention that they're married. And they go, oh, so you talk about sex with the kids? And he goes, no, I mentioned that I have a husband. And they're like, well, that's inherently sexual. He's like, is it any more sexual than a teacher announcing that she's pregnant? Because I'm pretty sure that's more about sex than me just saying I'm married. You know,
I mean, was it Herbalessence, the shampoo in the old 90s? That moaning, they would moan.
It was like an orgasm.
It was like an orgasm thing. They were sexualizing shampoo.
She's got the urge.
Yeah, like, and also, I mean, talk about talk about misogyny too. I mean, yeah. There's so much to unpack there, and that's for your next podcast. No, but it's one of those things like, oh my God. And then you're yelling at me for holding my partner's hand in a video. Like, please don't talk to me.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what? Talk to me and I have a few words for you.
Actually, come over here. I want to say
Yes, I have a few things to say to you.
Well, yeah, because exactly. Seeing men, say, wearing underwear on a float, like just in underwear, a Speedo or something, let's say, and it's like a dude with a nice body and he's dancing on a float, like, does anyone freak out if they see the exact same thing, but it's a woman and she's wearing like a bikini and it's on a float and there's a bunch of
No,
you don't hear anything because boobs
are sexualized. Always. Right. Boobs are always sexualized.
But we're totally cool with that form of sexuality being quote unquote shoved down our throats. And it's like, it's just a matter of, like you said, flipping the script and exposing the way that it's like all of this jargon, this don't shove it down my throat. It's all just steeped in homophobia. It's all just very clearly homophobic.
Homophobia and fear.
And fear and healing.
Yep. And we, our stuff, you know, gets censored on certain apps, like our content. And it's hilarious sometimes for being too sexualized, but it's hilarious. Even like we had this video that was like called Gay Flirting During a Pandemic, where it's literally B and I, and like we are fully clothed. We like, but it's like sexy. We like take a mask to reveal another mask, or he does his hand sanitizer and puts it on and rubs his hands, you know.
I've seen this one.
And like, it's good. Yeah. So it was flagged multiple times and taken down for being too sexual.
My God.
It's like,
we literally see
if straight people did that, would that happen? God. Like, it's almost like if it's queer, it's already a tick up on like, it's already risque. It's already risque to be queer in general. And then, you know, you do anything from there.
Because homophobic straight people literally can't think about gay people without thinking about gay sex. Like, it's like it's kind of like meeting trans people and like they can't,
whose fault is that?
They can't stop thinking about genitals. They can't stop thinking about what's between the legs.
Right.
But, and it's like, but that's all, again, that's your problem. Like, that's going on inside of you. That is
knowledge. That's blissful ignorance. That's you not learning. That's you not wanting to learn. That's you not wanting to grow. You want not wanting to change and you not wanting to heal.
The fact that you're so hyper.
That's not on us.
It's not. It's it is you that is hyper fixating on that, and you that is over sexualizing it, and the reclamation of the sexuality is part of pride. Like, whether or not people like that, it's like, it is part of it is to reclaim the normalization of that sexuality. Yeah.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
Beautiful, Austin.
Good work. Good work, Austin.
Oh, good work, the two of
you. Growing and learning.
You're so goddamn funny, and you made me laugh a lot. I hope you made the audience laugh too, and I hope that they go follow you if they're not already.
Yes, we hope so much.
Listeners, did you laugh? Did you laugh, listeners?
Did you just give a ha? Probably a ha.
Like a nice chuckle. We'll take a chuckle.
We'll take that.
We'll take a pity chuckle.
Even just like a smile that you were like, oh, okay.
I bet we got a pause laugh break out of a few people. Like, they had to pause the show and do a laugh break.
Oh God, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Let us know in the comments if you did.
If not, then we have to re-record this because I need people to like me. That's all we all, the only reason why we do this.
Literally.
Of course. That's, I mean, the name of my show is People Pleaser. That's what the name of my podcast is. So, yeah, that is the whole idea, is I'm only doing this because I want to be well-liked in at my funeral.
Truly.
Well, great. So people can follow you at The Homo Sapien Experience.
The Homo Sapien Experience on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. Those are the good ones. We have a Facebook, but it's dying.
We're trying. You know what? Follow us on Facebook. No, let's go on Facebook.
Yeah. Your aunts want to follow us. Tell them to get on Facebook.
Also, take the videos and share them in chats that need to be shared on Facebook.
Absolutely.
I want a TV show. That's what I want next, is a Homo Sapien Experience TV show.
Austin, we want that.
You're from your mouth to God's ears. Yeah.
Your mouth.
We want a few different TV shows.
We want a few
different
things.
Network.
We want a production company.
Honestly, the Homo Sapien Experience as a network sounds great.
As a network, as a production company, as it all.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we want to dream big.
So any Netflix people, Comedy Central, Hulu, Amazon, you know.
Yeah, just let us know. Hit us up. We're available. Oh my God, Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Oh my God.
Anderson Cooper, who's listening.
Anderson Cooper.
You've got the connect.
Thank you so much for staying, babe. Oh my God. He's so sweet.
So sweet. Love him.
It's so cool that he listens because, like, he doesn't have to. He's busy.
I know. Yeah. But babe is cute like that. Yeah, he's so sweet.
We love him.
He's the best.
Keep listening. Anderson, stick
thank
around.
You, Anderson. Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. This was lovely. I'm glad we got together.
So good. So awesome.
Thank you so much for having us, Austin. You're the absolute greatest.
You're the best.
You're the best. And thanks for being here. Kay.
Kay, bye.
Bye. So I'm just gonna throw this out there right now. Best guests so far of the show? What do we think? Let me know. Reach out on Instagram or, you know, yeah, on Instagram. Like, respond to, because I post this in the story every week. I post the episode in the story. Respond to me there or, like, hit me up on Twitter. What do you think? Best, who are your favorite guests who have ever been on the show? I know I have a lot. I've never had a guest on the show that I didn't love. So if any of my past guests are listening and you're like, ouch, harsh, it's not that. It's just that weren't Matt and Brandon just delightful? They just make me laugh. Dude, I just laughed a lot while talking with them. And then I was like reaching out to them about how they would like their names. So usually I reach out to people after I record the episode and I go like, hey, what would you like your name to be on the thumbnail, and like, how would you like me to, because sometimes people just want me to use their username on social media, or they just want me to use like their first name, or they want, you know, like, does Matt want to be Matthew or Matt, something like that. And I saw Brandon's last name and I asked him if he would like me to say Contreras or Contreras. Like, how do you like white people to pronounce your name? You know, which is like, I think, you know, we're getting into that phase. You heard at the beginning of the episode where they sort of correct me on my friend Cooper's pronouns. First of all, white people and fellow white friends who listen to the podcast, like, let's all try to get better about that stuff and be more graceful with corrections and making mistakes. And if you see a situation like that, you see a last name like Contreras, and go ahead and ask that person, how would you like me to say that, you know, on the show? I'm not holding myself up as the end all be all example of how to be a good ally. I fuck up all the time. That's kind of the point. Just be willing to make mistakes and be willing to look silly. But the point of the story is they crack me up because Brandon reaches back out. We were doing it on voice message on Instagram, and I was like, how would you like me to say your name? I don't want to sound patronizing or offensive, and I also don't want to sound like a white person saying like quesadilla or something at a Mexican restaurant. And he reached back out and he was like, oh, that's so nice of you. You can just say Contreras. That's fine. And then Matt, of course, sends a message after Brandon and goes, yes, but I would like you to pronounce my name. Curiano, the Italian pronunciation of my name, please. And it made me laugh. They're just really, really funny. Go follow them if you're not already. If you didn't already stop in the middle of that episode and go, I have to go follow this account, then I don't know what you're doing with your life. But go follow them. They're hilarious. I wanted to play another clip here for you at the end of the show. Since we're not doing a TikTok portion of the show, I'm going to play you another clip from Toby, who we heard at the beginning of the show. I know. But this is just, I mean, it's like, if you can stomach going through Toby's videos more than two or three of them, this is one that I found one day when I was just sort of scrolling through to try to get inside the mind of this odd little man. And this is his video that he made where he's trying to defend the GOP's stance on gay marriage. And I just want to play this and talk about it really quick before we end the episode. So here's Toby on why the GOP is actually... Their stance on gay marriage is actually okay.
Okay, this might be an unpopular right-wing opinion, but hear me out for just a second. I've contemplated making this video because I don't want to step on anybody's toes because I don't know how it's going to be received to many of you. So just know that everything I'm saying is my own opinion. So just to make everybody aware, there is many, 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 many gay people that voted for Trump in 2020 and continuously vote in the Republican direction in general. I have so many people reach out to me all the time who are gay, supporting what I'm saying and agreeing with what I'm saying. And one thing Democrats or liberals like to point out whenever I'm having a political debate with them, always how the GOP is against gay marriage and how Trump is against gay marriage and how the GOP would like to see gay marriage reversed. And the reason why they think this is because the GOP Republican platform of 2020, which on page 11 and page 31, they talk about what traditional marriage is, and they define it as marriage between one man and one woman. They also state that they condemn the ruling of United States versus Windsor, which they claim, quote, wrongfully removed the ability of Congress to define marriage policy in federal law. It also states they condemn the ruling of Obergefell versus Hodges, which they claim, quote, robbed 320 million Americans of their legitimate constitutional authority to define marriage as the union of one man and one woman. And for those of you who don't know, that court ruling required all 50 states to perform and recognize marriages of same-sex couples on the same terms and conditions that they recognize opposite-sex couples. So obviously, as a gay married man, I can't agree with what the platform states about gay marriage. But obviously, how you define marriage as a person is a personal choice. It doesn't affect me. But at the end of the day, we're all human. And from what I've seen, a lot of you guys in the Republican Party have accepted me with open arms regardless of my sexuality, and have even told me you don't care what my sexuality is, as long as I'm in the fight for freedom with you guys. And I think that that is what represents the Republican Party. But we have a stereotype.
Oh, that kills me. It kills me. I just wanted to play it at the end here because we've been having a lot of good laughs on this episode, and I just wanted to keep the laughs rolling. Do you hear that? It's so funny to me that it seems like in real time, he realizes like, oh, whoops, actually the GOP platform is like very clearly against gay marriage. He literally starts the video out by being like, a lot of people, a lot of liberals are always telling me that like the GOP is against gay marriage. And the reason that they think that is because of these things from the 2020 platform. And then he starts reading them and it's almost like, so here it says that they were against the Supreme Court decision to uphold gay marriage where gay marriage that gay people can have the same rights as okay, well, as a gay married man, obviously I don't agree with that, but they've been really nice to me, though, is the thing, is that a lot of Republicans have said like it's actually okay that I'm it's like Toby, you didn't need to post that video. You didn't need to post that. Like, you could have, as you were making the video, been like, oh, you know what? Actually, this platform is very clearly against gay marriage. Maybe I won't run with this video. It's so funny that he comes in so hot. He's like, look, a lot of liberals are always telling me that the Republican Party doesn't uphold gay marriage. Well, listen to me. As a gay married man, check this out. I'm going to read from the Republican platform from 2020 and show you all that actually they definitely are not in favor of gay marriage. They definitely support just marriage between a man and woman. Okay. So I'm not necessarily behind that per se as a gay married man. Like, obviously that kind of flies in the face of my relationship and my life, but I've met a lot of Republicans online and they've actually been pretty nice to me and said that it's okay that I'm gay. They did say that I'm going to hell, in the afterlife, but that's the afterlife. Okay, that's not now. They said right now it's okay if I'm gay, but that they do think that I shouldn't be allowed to be married and that, like, if my husband were sick, I shouldn't be allowed to visit him in the hospital. But they said that it's okay if, like, we're friends online and we sort of support each other in our political fights. They said that that's okay. They said it's okay for us to friend. Well, they said I could follow them. They said that they wouldn't follow me because they didn't want to be seen as following a gay person, but which I totally understand. That's their personal beliefs. But they said that, like, I could follow them and that's okay if we're friends that way, as long as I'm, like, supporting the same political things that they support, and as long as every once in a while they can share one of my videos to make it look like they also have gay friends. They said that that's okay. Well, they said that if they do share my videos, they'll qualify it by saying, hey, don't worry everyone, I think that gay people are going to hell, but this gay person makes some good conservative talking points that I think we can all agree with. They did clarify that that's going to be a stipulation of sharing one of my videos, but then they said, you know, that they're only doing that for appearances and that secretly we're still friends. Is, well, at least that was the implication that I got while speaking to them, because they seemed to be being friendly with me. It's such a, like, it's such a sad video. It's such a sad video to, like, hear in real time that Toby is completely unsupported by the political ideology that he has consigned himself to, that he has decided to be, is consigned a word? Consignment. You take but is consigned, resigned himself to? Whatever. You get what I'm saying. That video just kills me. Just gonna break down the GOP platform on gay marriage and, like, in the middle of the video, just, I guess they don't support the marriage that I currently have. But I'm gonna keep making these videos anyway, because it's that thing I said at the beginning. It's the comfort of ignorance as opposed to the discomfort of reality. It is uncomfortable for Toby to realize that there are people in the world who wish to do him harm simply because of his identity. It's uncomfortable. I'm sure that Brandon and Matt don't love it either. Hi, boys, if you're listening. I love you, and all of our listeners love you. It's uncomfortable to reckon with that. It's sad. It's heartbreaking at times. It's discouraging. But here's the thing, all of you Tobies in the world, if there's any of you listening, I don't think there are, but if you are, you can be like Brandon and Matt. You can get through the difficulty and the hardship of knowing that certain people don't accept your identity as valid, that certain people are going to fight against your right for just basic survival and existence, your right to just be who you want to be in the world, to be who you are, to just be authentic. There are going to be people who for some reason oppose that, and you can get through the discomfort of that and the difficulty of that, and you can thrive and live a beautiful, full, happy life. Do that. Don't be like Toby. All right, People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. We got the new TikTok album out right now. Now that's what I call a bunch of Austin Archer's TikTok songs compiled into an album, Volume 2. I love it when people go and buy the music. That's a great way to support. Go and listen to the music on Apple Music or Spotify. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/austinarcher. If you have the means to support on Patreon, I would absolutely love to have you be part of our producer team over there on Patreon. The show is mixed and mastered, as is all of my music, by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to themarmalademusic.com, tell Chris that you heard his work over here on People Pleaser, you're a big fan, and he will give you 20% off of your first audio project. So you've got an audio project that you need to have mixed. A show, a podcast, a song, an album, whatever, an audio book that you're, a demo reel for your voiceover acting career. Send it to Chris over at Marmalade Music, themarmalademusic.com. Chris will give you 20% off your first audio project if you tell him that I sent you. He's the best. Okay, go follow Brandon and Matt at the Homo Sapien Experience. I think that's everything for this show. Be nice to each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye.